You're listening to Louisiana Insider, a superlative guide to a great state's destinations, hosted by Errol Labor, executive editor of Louisiana Life magazine.
It's our Louisiana song. It's our favorite melody. It's our Louisiana song. Hearing it echo through the cypress tree.
Our topic today is the French language in Louisiana. It's something we've talked about in bits and pieces, but nothing quite like this. This is a pretty ambitious project. This is an effort called Tele Louisiane, and people who are trying to keep the French language alive through television and through various other means, through the internet, any way they can find, and just doing a really interesting job. With me are Caitlin Orgeron, who's the Chief Operations Officer of Tele Louisiane, and Will McGrew, who's the CEO and the co-founder of it. So congratulations on both. And so let's begin with that. We all know Louisiana's native French. What makes you think you can bring it back to where people were going to be talking it or understanding it?
I think a few different reasons. One of the things we work a lot with the French Canada in addition to France. And in French Canada, it's interesting because they have a lot of infrastructure and institutions developed around maintaining their bilingualism that we don't have here in Louisiana. And so sometimes it seems that we're more, we're less advanced on that front. But I often say that we lost the language battle, but we won the identity battle. And so one of the things that we find in Louisiana is that even people who don't necessarily speak French, and this is especially the case in the most historically Francophone parishes, like down the bayou in Lafourche-Terrebonne, where Caitlin's from, but also in Southwest Louisiana and Central Louisiana, there's a massive demand to bring back the French. And so a lot of people are part of the lost generation, which is the generation of people whose parents or grandparents spoke French, but then because of the discrimination and neglect of the language, they were not taught French. And so that's kind of created this massive hunger. And, you know, there aren't very good statistics, but we believe that it's almost like a majority that would like the French to be present more than it actually is. And so that openness and that interest is really what inspires us to keep going, even though obviously the number of native French speakers is still declining, because mostly native French speakers, it's people who are older than 50, older than 60. I think that's the main reason why we think it's possible, is that there are still a good number of French speakers. There is the ability to keep the culture alive. We can get young people talking to their grandparents in good local Louisiana French. But then also even people that don't necessarily speak French are supportive of the movement, and whether through, you know, supporting the legislation that we push for or putting their kids in French immersion, sharing our content on social media, they want to be a part of the movement even if they don't speak French or even if they don't have time to learn French.
So both of you speak French fluently. I mean, like real French. Okay. I mean, if you were in downtown Paris, you could be comfortable. Where did you learn that? Where did you get your language background?
I think we both learned French in school. My grandparents were native Cajun French speakers, Louisiana French speakers. But outside.
So your name is Orgeron, which is a French name.
Yes, okay. a very Louisiana name.
So you learned it in school. I mean, it wasn't part
of. I did. My first French class was 10th grade.
Uh-huh.
But I did have some, you know, some natural kind of interweaving of English and French as a kid at home. I think everybody from my community has some story of a word that they didn't realize was a French word until they were at, you know, a much older age than you would think would be the appropriate time to learn that vocabulary, because we would just use the word in French and never actually get around to using, you know, I've never.
So did your family speak French at home? Frequently or?
You know, speaking to what Will was saying about the lost generation, it was definitely an older, you know, it was kind of like the grandparents' secret language. So my grandparents, their brothers and sisters, when they would speak with each other, it was always in French.
Yeah.
So there was kind of this almost like a haze of French in the air, but it was, you know, it rose to the ceiling of the room. And so everyone under 4 feet tall didn't quite absorb it. They weren't, it never transferred its way down. It stayed with the adults. And even to the point where my parents don't really speak it, they can understand it when they hear, you know, their aunts and uncles and things, and they can, you know, the odd phrase, and they're able to respond, you know, conversationally, but not in any sort of way, you know, like not presentationally.
What is your mother's family name?
Lede.
Oh, Theo, you got it on both sides. What was the line of the day? And how about you?
So for me, it was different, but similar in some ways. Like, I think sometimes people think that people don't really speak French in New Orleans, but mainly the reason for that is that during like the process of Americanization, kind of in the early 20th century, and it really took off once the oil and gas boom took off, and we had a lot of Americans, as people say in Louisiana, coming in from other parts of the United States. New Orleans was like the first place to get really Americanized and for English to kind of take a hold. But it's interesting because I find that similar to the way down the bayou, the French, even with people that don't speak French fluently at all, there's still certain words that almost everyone knows that are, they use in English, but are French words. Like Caitlin brings them up all the time. And like when we're speaking English and you don't really notice it. But in New Orleans, I think there's kind of a similar way in which our like Francophone past still affects the present, in which people still feel very identified to the French culture. And so like you see the French flags all around, and you see like a lot of New Orleans flags that of course are like heavily influenced by the French heritage in terms of the colors and the fleur-de-lis. And so growing up, I feel like I always kind of had that background of like my family was very proud to be from New Orleans. My grandmother, my mom's from New Orleans. She went to Sacred Heart. It's like an old New Orleans uptown situation. I mean, not like an old Creole family, but my uncle was like Irish immigrant predominantly. His family for several generations in New Orleans. And my grandmother was actually from Spain. And so I learned Spanish from her, and my mom speaks Spanish too. But my grandmother and my mom and one of my aunts also speak French. And that was mainly just because like they learned it in school, my mom and my aunt. And then there was also just this like emphasis on speaking French, even though like people were speaking English predominantly. And my grandmother like would be a part of some of these like French societies that existed and still exist to this day, some of them that were actually.
So you just learned it from around, from your environment.
Well, I learned it in school eventually. That was kind of what inspired me to learn it. It was kind of that they spoke it, and my mom is a lawyer. And so she did 2 years in law school in France because of the civil law relationship.
Oh, so did you live in France for 2 years?
I didn't live in, no, when she was in law school, so that was before I was born, but yeah. But, and so then, so they were the ones inspiring me, but then once I learned it, I was able to kind of keep it up a lot. After I learned in school, and then I spent a summer or 6 weeks in Toulouse when I was in high school.
6 weeks where?
In Toulouse, in southwest France, yeah. And then after that, I was able to, when I got home, I really made an effort to, I wouldn't say exclusively, but I would like majority or at least half the time speak to my mom and grandmother either in French or in Spanish. And so it allowed me to kind of help actually use it in a practical way.
Your mind must be like a linguistic sponge, okay? I mean, you just kind of seem like to absorb all these things without any formal training, which is amazing. Well, if I may just, I'm tempted to mention my experience. I grew up in a French-speaking household at my family was from Voiles Parish.
Oh, wow.
And they spoke, they thought they were Cajun, but they really weren't. But they spoke, that Louisiana French, which is sort of Cajun. But what happened, you know, when my parents moved to New Orleans, I grew up in New Orleans, they never really talked French in front of me. I mean, and really, there was a bit of a stigma in French among my relatives. You know, it's kind of associated with being like a hick kind of language.
Of course, yeah.
And so, but when my parents were on the phone talking to relatives, they went back and forth with the language. And so to me, that was natural. Of course, a lot of it was franglais, you know.
Yeah.
They talk about watching the television and that sort of thing. When I was dating my current wife, though, and when I bring her over, they were very, very conscious about not speaking French in front of her. I mean, they thought that would be very, very rude. And I just regret all that. I mean, I wish, and they were trying to do what was right. I mean, at that point, they didn't see any point in raising me to speak French. But I wish they did. Okay, at that point, because I never really learned it.
Yeah.
By the way, is Kelly, our executive producer.
Hello. I have that same kind of background in the sense that I never learned it because my grandma was like she didn't speak it. Her parents and grandparents did, but they stopped because of that stigma. And they couldn't learn it, and they had to speak English in school, and so they couldn't speak French, and so they only spoke English at home because they were trying to practice, and then it trickled down. Basically, we lost it because of that, like, stigma of it being not, you know, correct to speak. And it's, I'm that generation that's like, I wish that I learned that, because we have those weird little sayings that my family says that we think are just to my family, but then I talk to someone else and they also say those little things and I'm like, oh, duh, that's because it's part of, exactly. I'm like, it's all part of one thing. Okay, got it. And so now I think that's what drew me to y'all at first, because I do want to learn that. And that is something that I want to learn, because that is a part of my heritage that I didn't get to have because of the stigma and the, you know, people wanting to kind of stifle that part of it. So I think that's.
I remember there was one expression, like when I was visiting relatives. This is when somebody was angry or upset about something. And I forget the exact thing, but the last part of it was des chiens, which is the dog. And it was supposed to be the equivalent of son of a bitch that was used often. And I heard that all my life. I never knew really what it meant. You know, I thought that's part of what it was, but it had a different meaning. It's a beautiful language. I mean, when really spoken, like, you know, like the real French, it's just such a lyrical quality to it, as opposed to German, you know, where they want to pound on you, something like that. But French is such a nice language.
It is, yeah. And it's funny, like, looking back to your first question, we really hear this, not I wouldn't say this exact story, but the very similar story, like literally hundreds of times, all the time. I mean, we everywhere we go. And I mean, we make an effort to be about all of Louisiana, because our view is that French and the different dialects of French, as well as the different like cultural traditions that accompany the speaking of French. So whether it's like boucheries or Mardi Gras, and the way Mardi Gras is practiced differently in different parts of the state, that all is part of like the immaterial cultural heritage of Louisiana and the people of Louisiana, and it really belongs to all of us. And so we make an effort to go all across Louisiana. Like, we've been all the way southwest as Cameron Parish. We've been up to O'Boyle's. We have a Cajun French cartoon, and one of the animators is from O'Boyle's. Obviously, we do stuff in New Orleans. We've been to St. Bernard. We've been all around. And so what we find is this story is just told over and over and over again. And so until recently, somewhat, the approach was kind of like a little defeatist and declinist of like, oh, well, that's unfortunate. You know what I mean? So I guess it's just going to die. We should have done differently. You know, it's like, or if we should have done something, it should have been in the 60s and 70s. And of course, sometimes that does occur to us. Like, what if people had done what we're doing or had the success that we're having in the 60s and 70s? We could have had, you know, at that time, there were about 1 million French speakers in Louisiana. And so it would have been easier, you know, and we could be more like Quebec. But the good news is that many people say what y'all say in terms of, oh, I wish that hadn't happened. And so now we still have the possibility, insofar as there's still people that speak French in Louisiana. And that's a big priority for us, is like both Caitlin and I, and also I guess among our team, it's about half and half in terms of like Louisiana French speakers versus people who speak a more standard French, but you know, we learned French predominantly like standard French originally, and both of us have Louisianized our French because of Caitlin, because of her family, and then me because of my work with Télévisión. But you know, I always say I'm a Louisianist, and you know, all of us kind of as part of the Télévisión mission, we're very Louisianist, and so that's one thing that even though all French is good French, our priority is saving, preserving, and developing, and kind of doing affirmative action for the Louisiana dialects of French and the Louisiana languages, whether it's like Louisiana Creole, you know, Louisiana French or Cajun French, or also increasingly work with people who speak Indian French or Native American dialects of French down the bayou and south of Lafourche, South Terrebonne Parish. And to this day, we're always we have the exact reverse mindset of like, people have this mindset of not only was French bad, but specifically like Louisiana French or Cajun French or Creole was worse. Like, that's like, maybe if you spoke French, that was okay. But if you speak Louisiana French, then it's just français cassé, c'est pas du bon français. But we're always like, that's the reverse. Like, we prefer, like, we're much more likely to interview someone and have them on the show if they speak a Louisiana dialect of French. Of course, we interview people. And like I said, like, we ourselves do not necessarily speak du bon français louisianais. But we think that's actually much more valuable. And in fact, is like an older, you know, I don't know, in some ways more lyrical and definitely more unique
mm-hmm.
version of French. And there's obviously multiple versions. And so, yeah, there's a window of opportunity, definitely, because that part, like French and Louisiana will survive without a doubt, like in terms of French period.
Mm-hmm.
But Louisiana French, it's TBD. And so that's kind of like what inspires mm-hmm. us every day.
But there's something that you can probably say, oh, this can't be done. But humor me on this, okay? If we wanted to try to identify, let's say, four maybe categories of French spoken in Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. For example, the Creole French
mm-hmm.
spoken in New Orleans area, as opposed to the Cajun French spoken in Southwest Louisiana. I mean, would there be some identifiable differences in that?
Yeah. I mean, I think there's ethnic and regional differences.
Yeah, it's kind of more of like if we could do a Venn diagram with different, you know, I would actually, that sounds like a name. That'll be the summer when we're not so busy. That would be what I'm working on as a good little visual. You know, they have shared vocabulary, but different inflection or different words for the same thing, but the accents sound similar. You know, just kind of depending on the geography of it.
Yeah.
And then you'll have, you know, there's a Creole, you know, the city Creole versus like up in Pointe Coupee Parish,
mm-hmm.
out in Parks, near Brobridge, those areas, those are all different dialects of Creole that are closer to, you know, more like the Haitian Creole than they would be a standard French or even a Louisiana French.
Now, we did a show recently with a gentleman.
Yeah, Cliff. We know Cliff, yeah.
What?
Cliff,
Cliff's
yeah.
Along. Yeah, we worked with him.
Yeah, okay. And what's he call his French again?
Cordini, yeah. Cordini, yeah.
Okay.
And
that was primarily, I think, kind of like a rural black, but also picked up by the Indians, kind of the whole area, like along the coast.
Well, it's more like Bayou Teche area.
Yeah.
Yeah, so like sort of Brobridge, like Parks, but...
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Mom. And so that's the thing is basically the way it works is that there's like a linguistic understanding and then there's also like how there's a popular understanding. And so
yeah.
In terms of the popular understanding, what you'll find is that because of the way like sort of what you were talking about with your heritage, it wasn't mainly like you might not have Acadian ancestors, but most white people in Louisiana who speak some type of French will call their French Cajun French. And
yeah.
doesn't necessarily mean anything linguistically, but it's more of like an ethnic label. And then similarly, most black people who speak French in Louisiana, whether or French or Creole, will call it Louisiana Creole, Creole French, Côte d'Ivoire. And then most Native Americans who speak French will call it either Indian French or Houma French. And then there's, of course, the fourth category would just be like people like us who learn French in school. And so it'd be just like French or standard French. But then... that's kind of what people call it. But the thing is, within that, that doesn't necessarily map. So, for example, like I mentioned this state representative who we work with a lot, who's one of the few that still speaks French or Creole, depending on your perspective. And he always thought he spoke Cajun French. But in fact, he's from Bayou Teche area, from like Brobridge. So that's where he represents. His name is Mike Huval. And he basically speaks Creole. Like his wife is from Avoyelles, Monica Mayu, and she speaks Louisiana French, Cajun French, but Avoyelles French, you know. And he speaks really Creole. And so it's all part of the spectrum. And some of the other, within Louisiana Creole, there's kind of like a few major dialects. And that's like Caitlin was saying, there's like the Bayou Teche area dialect. And so that's very similar to what Cliff speaks, Cliff Saint Laurent. And that's what many people call Couribini. Then there's the Pointe Coupee area dialect of Louisiana Creole. And then there's like a Vacherie River Parishes dialect. And then within French.
Would the Vacherie have more like a German influence on it?
Oh, I don't really know. I don't know enough of the people. It's over time.
Yeah.
I know I can send you guys some videos of people that speak that. That one I think is one of the, probably the more threatened one, the Vacherie dialect. And then with Louisiana French, it's really more regional. And you find like in different parts of the state, people speak differently. Like one of the most unique things is that definitely words change a little bit. Like for example, in some part, like, This is I'm not going to say what this means because it's a little vulgar, but this is the first thing that comes to mind because the most shocking thing is like Kawan means like snapping turtle in some parts of Louisiana, and then it's like a dirty word in other parts of Louisiana. And so you have to be careful with that, like where you're using it. But then another example pronunciation wise is like, and this is one of the weirdest things, is that Caitlin's people down the bayou, so like normally in Louisiana, you pronounce the J like you would in standard French. It's like je, like j'aime, et le, j'aime, like I like, or les jeunes, the youth. But like we did an episode on boucheries down in Golden Meadow, down the Bayou Lafourche, and they aspirate the J. It's like something from Spanish or something from like the 18th century. And so they say ha. So it's like, moi j'aime faire ça. Moi j'aime faire ça. It's like, and so.
It's but it's like, not all the time. Like
but
they
often.
Can't even decide within one person when it
when
happens.
To use.
I'm just, it was, I was really trying to like figure out a phonetic rule to apply. I'm like, okay, I'm going to create something based off of what I'm hearing, and I couldn't do it. So it's so strange, you know, like even within the community, it's not across the board.
Yeah.
Well, the, I'm really interested in the rural Black French, which isn't New Orleans Creole by any means, I wouldn't think. But like I mentioned, my parents were in Voiles Parish, and my grandfather's store, and some of the customers were Black. I guess they were farmers or farmhands, but they spoke French.
Of course, yeah.
And it was really a novelty, especially for people to the city that they have it, you know. Mm-hmm. I remember there was one man in particular, his name was William Ballard. I still remember, he was a beloved figure, you know, because when William Ballard come in, you could talk French, you know, you could talk French with him. But where did that French come from?
Well, what we find is it's all pretty similar. You know what I mean? The thing is, it's really more regional. It depends. Like, there are ethnic divisions. But, like, what you find is, like, the Black people and the white people in any area will speak closer French than the Black people total in Louisiana. So for example, like I would assume that like the Black people in a Boyle's Parish are gonna speak a French more similar to the French spoken by the white people than to Black Creoles in Teche area. And so for example, Mike Kuval, like I said, he's white, but it's Kuribini basically. He basically speaks Creole. And his wife is white from a Boyle's and she speaks more of a French, you know what I mean? And so it's basically like everyone was speaking French or Creole, and in some communities there was a bit of a code switching, and so people would speak French in more sophisticated settings and they would speak Creole more at home. But that's one of the things that's so rich about what we do, and also whether intentionally or not, like historically in French in Louisiana was not as much like valorized or present in terms of how it's not just Cajuns that speak French. Of course, hundreds of thousands, tens of thousands of Cajuns speak French when we interview Cajuns all the time. I would say about 60% of our team members are Cajun, but it's very important for us that people see that the Black Creoles speak French and at the same rates, if not higher percentages, and then also the Native Americans in the down the Bayou tribes. And honestly, the Native Americans, they speak French the best in the sense of that because of segregation, there were Black schools and white schools. And so after 1921, when they had the mandate that all education had to be in French, there were Black schools and white schools, and so obviously they were segregated, but both the Creoles and the Cajuns went to school and were forced to speak English, but the Native Americans, there were no schools for them. And so up until the 60s and 70s, that was the first time they were entering the public school system. And so now, and that's, we're working a lot with, but we work with all the tribes, but especially we're working with the Pointe aux Chênes on the first indigenous French immersion school. I'm on the board of that. And it was a bill that was passed last year by the legislature unanimously, and was signed by the governor. But specifically, it's the first French immersion school for indigenous communities. And what's really unique is that usually with the Cajuns and the Creoles, there's exceptions, but usually in terms of native speakers, it's usually going to be people at least 60. You know what I mean? But more likely 70s and above. Whereas with the Native Americans, there's literally people in their 40s and 50s who speak perfect, fluent Louisiana French or Indian French. And so there's a huge opportunity really to keep it alive in the communities. But anyway, so long story short, it's really important to us. We always use terms that are inclusive. And so we tend to say Louisiana French as much as possible. For people like Cliff, the Creole speakers, it's very important for them that that Creole is considered a second language. And so we try to recognize that it's a sister but related language. And then otherwise, we identify people's language by however they identify it. And so people that were with the United Homa Nation are going to say they speak Homa French. People that are from other tribes will say they speak Indian French. People that are Cajun, even if they speak Kuribini, will say they speak Cajun French. You know what I mean? And then a lot of Creoles will say either they speak Louisiana Creole or Kuribini or Creole French. We try to include everyone. And that's the thing that makes us feel like there's a real potential, is it's not just one ethnic group. It's many different ethnic groups that have a lot in common. You know
the area in southwest Louisiana, but above above Lafayette Parish, close to the Pointe Coupe Parish, St. Landry Parish is one of my things. It's my understanding that after slavery, there was a lot of black settlement, freed blacks that settled in that area. I think there was some kind of housing that was provided for them and all that. So Opelousas, for example, and so it could have been that you had a huge free black population, but they carried with them what they had learned, you know, from the plantations. And some of them were French people, and so maybe that was where it came in, and then it kind of spread upriver, like you say, Pointe Coupe Parish, and like the Vallis Parish, which would be right above that, you know. So,
yeah, definitely. I mean, that we work a lot in St. Landry. We work a lot with an organization called Creole Inc., and it's a Black Creole association around Lafayette. But a lot of the people are from either St. Martin Parish or St. Landry Parish. I mean, that's one of the things that's so interesting is just the shades, you know, of Louisiana. It's like people look white, black. You can't really tell what people look like. They're just the full shades. And a lot of that is the history of descendants of slaves, of course, but then also like Louisiana's free people of color. And that's another part we try to reclaim, that heritage that's been forgotten, is like, I didn't realize this, but before the Civil War, Louisiana was really the only place in the United States where there was a significant population of free people of color. And in fact, 25 of the 25, for example, wealthiest people, black people before the Civil War, 21 of them were in Louisiana. And so many of them were merchants, et cetera, and actually activists against slavery and against segregation, but other ones were in fact plantation owners, you know, and so that's another part of the history, and slave owners, you know. And yeah, that's another part of the history, but like that diverse history of the different European populations, but then also within the African descended populations in terms of enslaved people, but then also free people of color mixed and continued. And that's kind of what created the gumbo of French speakers, but also Louisianans in general that we have today.
So in terms of the things that y'all are doing, y'all actually have a TV show with a weekly show on LPB on Thursdays at
7:45.
Yeah. Okay. And so anybody listening to this, there's an LPB outlet wherever you are throughout the state. But tell us about that show.
Yeah, so it's called Love at Yale. I don't know. Okay, it's also available online, I would say, so people can see it on
both on our YouTube channel with French subtitles and on LPB's YouTube channel with English subtitles that I work very hard on.
Are you the person that's on that? Or?
Yes.
Yeah, because I was watching it. You're very good.
Thank you. Yeah. It is myself and my other co-host, Drake LeBlanc, who's not here with us today, but is, you know, the third leg of the Tele Louisiana tribe.
I mean, you're a really polished anchor. I mean, you could go get a job in Lyon or something like that.
Yeah. I like to say that I've had no formal broadcast journalism training, but I did have a couple of classes in that building at LSU. So, you know, maybe it just kind of worked its way in. I walked past a couple classes.
Osmosis.
Well, you've also always been like a local news nerd. I mean, because we just hired Caitlin last year. And she was a French immersion teacher for 10 years, but that was the other thing when we were hiring her. She was, or when we were, you know, interviewing her, she was like, oh yeah, I watch every morning. I watch WWL, like all the different local news. And I was like, oh, this is really great. You have the French, the education, and the news.
I have the, you know, the broadcast schedule memorized of like, oh, well, this channel ends at this time. And that's when I switch over to this channel to see how they're covering this story, you know.
But yeah, La Vie is 15 minutes. It's the first French news show. Period, and also the first one airing statewide in basically like 30 years or something. And there's a package, there's a story about something happening across Louisiana, and then there's like a longer sit down, but it's like a 5-minute sit down interview with someone. And it's, we try to balance, like I said, between Creoles, Cajuns, and Native Americans. And we try to cover as many parishes as we can. So we've done New Orleans stories, for example. Almost all of them are with French speakers, but we make exceptions certain times. Or Creole speakers, I should say, French or Creole. And like last week, we had a special episode on the Isleños in St. Bernard Parish. And so I got to use my Spanish to speak to some of the elders who still speak Isleño Spanish. And then tonight we have an episode on the Mardi Gras Indians, the Black Masking Indians. So there was one person that we interviewed in French, but then the other people were foreign English with French.
Were there many French-speaking Mordecai Indians?
It was difficult.
Not to our knowledge. Yeah, we were just focused on getting someone to interview, but that'd be something interesting to
And who was that? Where was he from? You remember?
So it was Bo Dean, who was from the...
Originally from the 8th Ward.
8th Ward, yeah. And then Diane Honore, Destrehan Honore, who was from Tremaine.
And so what is their French? Is it like the old Creole French?
Well, they didn't really speak French. But the thing is, her parents... It's because the thing
Okay.
Louisiana, New Orleans...
They're like us. They grew up...
Exactly, right, exactly. But that's what... Yeah, that's what she said. That was either her grandparents especially, and then a little bit her parents, I think, is what she was saying.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. So that's what we always... For us, it's always important. It's like Louisiana is... there's many different parts of Louisiana that like are markers of our identity, and the French is like an important part of it. But there's these other traditions and things that kind of like create who we are as a people. And so in addition to promoting the French, we also try to promote and maintain all the things that are like adjacent to it. And like a tradition like the Mardi Gras Indians is just such a great example of that, how it's so rich, it's so anchored in our history, and it's part of our immaterial cultural heritage, and it's something that doesn't exist anywhere in the world. And so for us, it's all part of the ecosystem that like maintains what Louisiana is and what's worth kind of fighting for.
We are always Louisiana all the time. We're, if we can do that in French, all the better. But we're not gonna.
Not 100% requirement.
Right. We're not gonna sacrifice Louisiana.
The good story,
promotion,
yeah.
Louisiana stories.
Well, how would you classify the French that you use on the broadcast? Do you have like a more standardized French?
The writing, yeah, is probably more standard. We tried, a dash of Louisiana. I definitely have Louisianized my accent a bit. So my former colleagues from the French immersion schools around the state, as I've run into them over the past year while I'm doing this and not teaching, I've had a few of them be like, "You changed your accent."
both of you tend to have a little bit of an accent. And I say that with admiration. I think that's a wonderful thing to have. Yours, I think, is being a little bit more standard French, and yours a little bit more Louisiana Cajun French. But they're beautiful accents.
Right, that D or T sound instead of the R in the back of the throat. I think it's, kind of stems from one of the first times that I was, creating content for Tele Louisiana. I had a comment from someone from, Bayou region of Louisiana, like, "Why are you making the R sound in the back of your throat?" Like,
yeah, right. It's very controversial.
Like,
not controversial, but we get a lot of feedback on it.
So it's like, all right, I know my audience now.
Y'all getting response.
Responses both ways. Yeah, for sure. I mean, I also noticed that people tell me that I kind of switch my accent depending on the interview. And so I was raised, like, I speak most naturally like a standard French, but then sometimes with certain interviews, you have to like Louisianize your French. And so I'll start like, well, even in my standard French, I use a lot of Louisiana terms all the time, like Esther. I never really say maintenant, which means like now in French, but we always say Esther and ici and nous autres instead of nous. But I definitely in certain interviews like have to Louisianize my French. And I wish I would just more naturally Louisianize it, but it's like a process that's happening. But I remember, like, I was with the French consul the other day, and she was, we were driving to the Ponochen board meeting, the Ecole Ponochen board meeting, and so someone from the tribe called me, and then with him I speak French, but then she was like, "Wow, tu es en train de parler Indien," like I was speaking Indian, basically, and it's like, because it's true, I mean, I was a reflex, but just it's sort of like code switching. Other people do this all the time, even in English. You want the other person to understand, so you just speak more like they speak, as opposed to maybe how you would naturally speak.
Right. I've always said that I have like a telephone voice in English. You can tell when I've been with my family for a week straight and not speaking to anybody else, because I'll come out of that hole and they're like, "Whoa, you're straight out of the bayou." Whereas other times, kind of when I was living in France, sometimes I'd be like, "Who did you talk to in your family just now?"
Yeah, right.
I can tell, like, was it your mom or your granny? Because it's bad. And just like, I know the flat A, I'll catch myself sometimes. But, you can be conscious of that and kind of press, "Hello." Like I said, the telephone voice, answering the telephone the way you speak. So it's kind of the same type of mentality of like, oh, my French when I'm speaking to French people, as in from France, versus, you know,
local Louisiana French people.
Right.
But yeah, we really receive a lot of feedback. Like I said, like, we're like unapologetically like Louisiana. It's like our mission is to preserve and develop Louisiana French and all of its varieties. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, like, we recognize that like all French is good French, and so speaking any French is progress and helps. And so, for example, like, if we hadn't learned standard French, me and Caitlin, like, we wouldn't be, and Drake too, he did French immersion, we wouldn't be able to do what we're doing of trying to promote the Louisiana French. And so we definitely receive feedback sometimes, like, in the comments. It's good because it means a lot of people are watching our stuff. But some people are like, oh, where's the fellow with the ponytail? Like, he where is his French from? Where is he from? You know what
right.
I mean? Because usually who I'm interviewing is going to be a Louisiana French speaker. But then also we receive comments the other way, in the sense that, like, some people believe that, oh, we'll just have, you know, it's a lost battle. We can only teach the standard French. And, like, we don't believe that. Like, we think it's important to teach Louisiana French as much as we can, use our videos in the schools. And they are using a lot of the French immersion schools. And so some people think, oh, well, what you're saying here is not correct in standard French. And so we really get it both ways. And so we always try to, like, approach all feedback in good faith, but then recognize that we can't please everyone.
Yeah,
but
don't worry. English speaking, and we get a lot
media,
of feedback.
In media in general, yeah. But one thing that is really important about all of it is the whole process of figuring out, like, what French we use and prioritize Louisiana French, but also accepting all types of French. We realize that, like, one of the myths that people say most commonly, not just that it's not good French, so that's totally a myth.
Yeah.
It is good French. And many of these people that speak Louisiana French as their first language, or Creole, or whatever, they're actually, like, as people think it's, like, grammatically broken or something, they're actually, like, conjugating verbs correctly, et cetera. The conjugations, in some cases, are just slightly different because it's from an older grammatically correct things, not necessarily the current standard version of French.
Or sometimes they'll, like, avoid the whole issue of having to remember, you know, like, gender and number agreement. They're like, well, we'll just use the plural one all the time.
Right.
And then we don't have to worry about it. It's just, you know, instead of like mon grand-père and ma grand-mère, just mes grand-mères. That is an interesting workaround.
No, there's
that
interesting
they just
things
came
like that.
Up with through speaking, you know, as a, it's almost like an oral tradition rather than a written tradition. So it's like, well, when you only learn language through speaking, you never have like a written cornerstone of,
right.
Oh, that's how to signify that sound. You just kind of make up a symbol for the sound that you're hearing.
Right.
And it kind of, you know, it's easier to blur the lines.
It must be funny. Okay. Suppose you were the boucherie.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And you saw some people making cracklings.
Mm-hmm.
What would you refer to that as?
Breton.
That's
okay.
A big thing. Yeah, we've talked about this.
Yeah.
Okay.
I will do it for the sake of message transmission, for the sake of comprehension. I like to be understood, even if I don't necessarily, if it's not my first choice of word. So I'm like, I would never choose to say cracklin'.
No, I agree
with
you totally.
Die on that hill,
you also
but...
got on up there too.
Huh?
You also got on up in the oils too.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Yeah.
We've heard the word cracklins. What was
that?
Right.
I'm like,
it's
okay.
I mean, that's like an Americanized word that came from, from North Carolina, probably something like that.
Better than pork rind, I guess. You know,
yeah.
I'm like, look, I'll allow it if the alternative is we can all band together for some pork rind.
Against pork rinds, yeah.
It could be a long battle, but maybe it's worth it, okay.
Right, but gratons, I'll take chicharrones before I'll take cracklin.
Yeah,
if I have to rank them.
So you do the TV show, and then you also do a few specials. So how can people access this? If they go to YouTube?
Mm-hmm.
YouTube, we're on all the socials. So YouTube, Instagram, we have Facebook, Twitter, TikTok.
Also television.com. Yeah.
Right,
okay.
On our website with our articles, blog.
When President Macron from France came here last year, did you all get to meet with him?
We did meet him.
Did.
Yeah, we were involved in that whole
okay.
situation, let's say.
So did you all talk to him?
We did talk to him, yes.
So tell us about it. What did you all say?
Well, we talked to him twice. First in the street, and then later we were going to be at the reception that he had at NOMA. So first we said, like, thank you for coming. Why is French important in Louisiana? But then later we made more of the pitch. And sometimes sometimes we wish the French side would participate more in the French Renaissance in Louisiana. Traditionally, I think there's a bit of a kind of neocolonialist mindset of, oh, look at these cute little Cajuns. You know what I mean? Like, they don't really believe that it's actually a real thing. Like, there's actually a possibility necessarily. I mean, some individuals do, of course. For example, our French consul, we have Natalie Barras. She's very supportive and treats it seriously and thinks it's something worth investing in, et cetera. But basically, that was my pitch. As I said, he announced this program called French for All, which was like to fund French education across the United States. And I said, you know, Mr. President, in other parts of the United States, French is just another foreign language. There's not really a significant interest in it. So there's going to be, no matter how much money you spend, there's never going to be a real possibility to make hundreds of thousands or millions of people speak French. And I was like, here in Louisiana, it's all the opposite. People view French, or many people, if not the majority of people, view French as part of who they are and part of their identity. And people who don't speak French often wish they would. And so your return on your investment is going to be much higher. Mm-hmm. And so he just said...
Did he buy that?
You know what I mean? I don't know.
We'll
he, said, he said, okay, you know...
Typical politician fashion. Just no direct answer.
Yeah, exactly. And so we may be going back to France at some point in June for La Fête de la Musique. And so hopefully maybe if we see him again, we're going to like follow up on that.
Yeah, but you would think, like you said, you would think that there would be more of an interest since we
are
a state that speaks French, like speaks a lot of French and a lot of different versions of French. You would think that it with a goal of trying to get French spoken all over the country, that they would focus on the one state that actually promotes it as a cultural identity, you know, like, and embraces that.
And one thing I would say is that it is true that the one major French investment is that they do have an agreement between the state of Louisiana and France, and also French Canada and Belgium, where they send over the teachers for the French immersion schools. And so, like, every year there's about 100 teachers in the French immersion schools. And I mean, I think it's predominantly funded by the state, but they allow, it's an agreement so that they don't have to lose their, they're still considered like civil servants in France. And so that's very important. So they don't lose their like pension or whatever their benefits are. So that's very important and is the most significant contribution of France. And the French immersion schools really rely on that. But it is true that like French can't just exist in the classroom. It has to exist online,
outside,
in real life, et cetera. And so we're always trying to pitch, okay, like, education is good, but anything needs to be, you know, I have an economics background, so for anything to be sustainable, there needs to be financing and it needs to be part of the economy. And so,
well, I think, yeah, and I mean, I was taught French in school, and I think I would have held on to it or kept it if I had it outside of the classroom. Like, I had a reason to use it because my mom didn't use it, my grandma didn't use it, you know, so my grandma could understand what I was saying, but she couldn't, like, have a conversation with me. And so I think it was kind of, I'm like, well, when am I going to need to use this other than to get the grade in school and be done with it,
that
kind of thing.
That was a pretty pervasive mentality in all of the classrooms that I stood in front of
for
so long. And, you know, it got to the point where one of the reasons that I ended up leaving the classroom was because you can't demonstrate that French is not just for school from inside the school. You know, you can show examples, but it's hard to kind of like, you know, I'm like, I'm here 10 hours a day. So how do I show you that you can use your French outside of here when I'm sleeping most of the time? So now that I get to work with Tele Louisiana, I can kind of be like, look, French, it's not just for school. It's for, it's for TV. Y'all all want to be on YouTube. I did it. Let me show you how.
Yeah.
I did it, and the French is what allowed me to do it.
Do you think it's important to use outlets like social media for that reason, to try to get a younger audience a little bit more interested?
It's, you know, it's just such a ready-made web of access to so many different, you know, because it's kids, it's the parents, because the, I don't want to use the word issue, but the circumstances of immersion schools are, especially in Louisiana, we are at this time where it's almost like a crux of I can't do anything about the fact that I'm not a native speaker. Mm-hmm. Will can't do anything about the fact that he's not a native speaker. All we can do is learn what we can learn and kind of be the bridge from the native speaker Louisiana French generation to this this new crop of kids that we're already really invested in cultivating with all of these French immersion schools. So we have kind of this little Francophone army ready-made,
exactly, yeah.
And then we don't have anywhere to send the troops.
Yeah.
And, or, you
so
know, there are
that.
Places that we could send them, but they're not. There's not one location
mm-hmm.
of that information. So what we try to do is kind of like, here, you know, we're working on building a French-speaking economy, places for these immersion French speakers. You know, they're learning maybe not necessarily a Louisiana French, because it's a high likelihood that their immersion teachers come from France, Belgium, other French-speaking areas outside of Louisiana. But if they're part of the immersion program, they become native speakers.
Right.
Because they're learning it at almost a native speaker level from that early age, even if they're not using it inside of the home. But if we can supplement, if we can help people bring the French into their home, even if they don't necessarily understand it, you know, kind of like we, not that Boudini is trying to be French Dora the Explorer, but,
a little bit.
You know,
well,
how
Louisiana
many
French Dora
of us knew, you know, learned simple Spanish words
mm-hmm.
from just that little cartoon girl being in our houses on weekday mornings.
1000%, yeah.
You know, kind of just, it's there. I wasn't trying to learn Spanish, Dora forced me. But, right, you know, just kind of, it happened. And so if we can do the same thing for these families with the French supports, because teachers are overwhelmed, speaking from experience. There's too many, you know, there isn't one source of material, and not that there, you know, necessarily needs to be a cookie cutter way to
yeah.
do French immersion in Louisiana. There should be a lot of outside cultural influence in the spirit of gumbo. You know,
right.
We want as much of the, let's take all of the good parts of all of the different people who are here and kind of put them all together. I bet it tastes good.
Does French immersion work?
Oh, wow, big question. Yeah. I mean, I would say yes, it works in terms of what Caitlin is saying about people really do speak French if they do French immersion for a good number of years. But there's a few different issues that there needs to be. I mean, Caitlin could talk to you about
yes,
this for
but.
Hours. It needs to be supported more. I think it's not a simple
right.
solution. Like, we need to have better curriculum. There needs to be investment in the creation of curriculum. There needs to be better investment in teacher training. There needs to be a much bigger effort to train local Louisiana teachers, because the French, it's great to have all the French teachers, but it's not sustainable. And then also, like we said, like a big focus for us is getting the Louisiana French in the classroom. And so that's the other big side of it, in which it's not working sufficiently. And that's why we do what we do. And Caitlin's analogy of the bridge is really how we view our job in terms of how can we use the like linguistic knowledge and cultural knowledge of the elders, and then the like more formal professional French that's been learned by young people like us, in order to like get that Louisiana French back into the classroom. But really the French immersion programs, they're really spectacular. I think they're like one of the jewels of our public education system. But really we just need to take it seriously and kind of think about it globally, not just be like, oh, we'll throw French out there and it'll
yeah.
work, but really like work with the teachers. But one of the things, and that's one of the things that is great, is that like Caitlin was saying, is La Veille for older kids, and then Boudini, which is Les Aventures de Boudini et ses Amis, which is a show that we produce with a production company out of Lafayette with our two animators, Marshall Woodworth, who's from Avoyelles, and Philippe Biodo, who's from Lafayette. That's in its second season, which will be aired on LPB starting in the fall. But that's another show that really helps make it relevant. And so they learn Louisiana French, they learn about science and social studies and math, but all through the show. So there's a lot of work to be done. I mean, some people focus on the negative things. We try to focus on the positive and create value add. Yeah.
I've been negligent on this. We haven't mentioned Codafil
mm-hmm.
yet. Do you have much interaction with them, or do you not?
We definitely have
okay.
a lot of interaction with them. We know them, yeah.
All in the same sphere. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Warren Perrin, we've interviewed several times.
Yeah, Warren, we know, yeah, of course, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's limited what they can do. And I think part of the problem is that their mission was pretty large originally.
Right.
And I think other than the teachers thing, they don't really know what else to do. So they do like initiatives from time to time. And like, that's one of the things that we've wanted to do, is like create, like be laser focused on what we're doing And it's like what Caitlin said, it's like we're producing media in French in order to create a movement and an ecosystem to support the future of French in Louisiana from the private sector, and working obviously with like public sector partners. And so that's kind of the one of the things, it's like we have that pillar of the French space, but we need other pillars. Mm-hmm. And I think that'll make like Codefill's job easier if, you know, there's other people that fill other roles that can have an impact.
For those who know what we're talking about, Codefill is a state commission agency standing for the Council for the Development of the French Language in Louisiana. Mm-hmm. And this man named Warren Perrin, from the very beginning, has been was involved with starting it, and he's still been the, I guess, the crusader for it. Just a couple more quick things, and then I gotta go. First of all, how do y'all make money on this? How do y'all push sales, or do you?
Yeah, it was mainly sponsorships.
Sponsorships and some legislative hustling.
Yeah, right. So that's the big thing. Is I have like an economics and politics background. But we, our biggest funding has come from the state. And so we've got funding from the state legislature. Yeah, that funds our two shows on LPB,
nice.
La Veille and Boudini. But then we've also got like grant funding before, working with local nonprofits. We have some sponsors, et cetera.
So the state is supplementing your programming and...
Yeah, they're like funding it. Yeah, through
yeah.
LPB. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
Because there was some legislation that was written of this money that was would be set aside...
Uh-huh.
For French language programming in the state, and
okay.
then it just for 30 years was not being taken advantage
of. Well, it was
never
funded. It was never.
So you'll be. I couldn't imagine anybody more important to do with this than what you do.
Yeah,
so.
thank you. But I mean, that's the thing is that we're a lot of what we do is kind of reigniting little like ideas or embers that were like put down in the 70s and 60s that maybe
what
never
happened
actually.
To,
yeah,
you know,
right.
Let's spark that again.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And the social media. I mean, it does help us. I mean, sometimes we really admire and respect everything that was done before us. Like, we know all of the people, like Warren and Barry Anselet, and then on the Creole side, like I said, we work with Creole Inc. Sometimes, and it's great, and we work well with all those people, and sometimes, though, people are like, oh, how did these, like, young kids, like, how did they figure out to do this thing that we were trying to do, you know, like, in the 60s mm-hmm. and 70s? And I really do think part of it is the social media. Mm-hmm. We've figured out how to use
right.
that to access... Not only to access younger audiences, but really to access all audiences.
A wider
yeah.
audience.
Yeah.
Just a more pervasive presence to be able to, you know, so
have
many of these stories.
Well, there's no
that
limitations on
right.
it, too. So it can be anyone.
It can be anyone. And that's the thing for us. We want it to be anyone,
mm-hmm.
everyone. And in terms of our, like, editorial line, it's very, like I said, I often use the term Louisianas. And so that means, like, focus on, like, Louisiana, but also
mm-hmm.
focus on, like, everyone in Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I love, one of my favorite things about my job is that so almost everyone is either for it. There's people that are neutral, but there's very few people that are against it. And so like we have like the most like lefty Bernie, we've been left of Bernie people in like the Bywater and Mid-City, et cetera, who are so for it. They think it's an important thing to bring back the culture. And then literally like the most conservative, pro-Trump, whatever, people in rural areas or otherwise in the legislature, they're also really for it. Some of the biggest people, the biggest advocates for sometimes they're like, some people think it's going to be an issue because of English only, but Louisiana is a different identity.
Mm-hmm.
And so some people are like, oh, well, how have you worked with like the MAGA, whatever? I'm like, I work really well with
right.
the MAGA
so
members of our state legislature
breed.
To keep our culture alive. And the same thing, I work really well with our most progressive members. You know, I could list names, but it's really the full spectrum. And so that's what I love of like doing something positive that brings people together. There's people that are neutral, but there's very few people that are
right.
negative about it, you know? And so I think it's so needed. You know, that's the other side point where it's like our immaterial cultural heritage is worth preserving, period. But I believe, and to some extent, we believe that focusing on our culture and what we have in common is also part of like reestablishing certain like commonalities mm-hmm. and social trust that's been lost in order to like make us realize that we have more in common than what divides us, you know?
Yeah. Bringing people together.
Yeah, it's really true.
It's
yeah.
amazing when it's like a whole pig roasting on a spit.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Do y'all like Cajun music?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I do. It's for me. It's like it has its time and its place. Like it, I'm instantly at the fair. Mm-hmm. I need a shrimp boulette in my hand when I hear the accordion. It is not like I like a lot of. Music and I'm like I can't spend too much time.
Yeah.
I'm like I get enough of it without selecting it as a soundtrack.
Well, some of those early recordings, like the like Jolie Blanc, which was the first
yeah.
classic, but they didn't really have a lot of the technology,
mm-hmm.
and they just had
right.
A violin and all that. Okay. Anyway, are you familiar with the song Colinda.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. We had one of our first shows. That was about a guy named Rod Bernard, who was really like,
yeah, of course,
the first. He was like the Hank Williams of Swamp Pop. Okay. And we had his son a couple of times, Shane Bernard, who wrote a book mm-hmm. about Swamp Pop. And he, maybe you know this, and so I apologize if I'm. He told us, and I was stunned about the origin of the song Colinda. Are you familiar with this? Is that, you know, what the song says is that Colinda was this beautiful girl in all the bayou land, and all the Cajun boys wanted to hold her hand, you know, that sort of thing. You know, they all wanted to dance with Colinda every night. Well, the parents wouldn't let them, okay? Mm-hmm. The parents were very suspicious of hanging with the Cajun boys. However, if her parents weren't there or at home, then they'd go dance with her. And the word would go out, Alors danse, Colinda, alors danse. You know, so Mary, Pala, alors danse. And so they'll just sing them with the parents with their they'd dance. But he said the origin of that was with the slave culture
mm-hmm.
that the that in some places the slaves weren't allowed to dance. Okay, and if the authorities, whoever they were there, they couldn't dance. But sometimes they weren't there, and there was a slave dance whose name was something like Colinda. Mm-hmm. It was like that. Okay, so the word would spread. Alors danse Colinda. Mm-hmm. Okay, it was because the army were there, and so they could dance, and so that apparently historic ritual, you know, got translated into the Cajun song. Anyway, if you ever hear a song, Rod Bernard, I'm sure you have, but I love listening to it because he does a few lyrics in English and then he breaks into the Cajun French. And to my ear, he does a great job with it, you know. He goes back and forth with it. And I think it's really like the ultimate song.
Yeah. So actually, I'll just say that Colinda, we're familiar with the song and also Rod and Shane Bernard. And then, but Colinda is a... is one of the main characters in our animated show with Marshall and Philippe is his name Colinda.
Oh, so really?
It's a Creole girl, yeah, named Colinda. Yeah, so that was the inspiration, of course.
So she's really an important character.
Yeah, there's three characters, Houdini, Coco, and Colinda, and Philippe and Marshall developed these with. There used to be a public television personality in Lafayette called Le Grand Houdini, and he had Houdini, which is like a magician, and Coco, which was a cocodrilo, an alligator. Yeah. And then they added a third character to have Creole representation, but also have a woman. It's Colinda. And it's really good. It's all Louisiana French. And so if you have kids, I definitely encourage you to watch it with them so that they learn the French. And then the other thing I'll say is that I find that story interesting. I wasn't familiar in terms of the origins, but that's one of the things that we find is that so much of our history, there is the things to be proud of, right? Like that are forgotten, you know, in terms of our rich literary heritage, our rich musical heritage, et cetera. And then like I was talking about the fact that we had these like literary scholars and wealthy businessmen, et cetera, who were Black Creole in the 19th century that have often been forgotten, like the famous Plessy versus Ferguson case. That was like a Black Creole French speaker, Plessy, who was part of the effort to challenge segregation.
So, now, I saw that in one of your publications. Plessy spoke French?
Yeah, he spoke French, yeah. And so his whole, and the whole activist group that he was part of was like a Creole French-speaking activist group. And the whole...
Okay.
Anti-racist part of it was very important, but also the whole like Louisianist or Creoleist part of it was very important. They wanted to maintain their language and culture in Louisiana. And so that's the part we need to like be proud of and, you know, reclaim that heritage. But then there's also the part where it's like a lot of the cultural traditions we have now are from a complex history of like pain and segregation, slavery, racism, colonization, you know, discrimination against the Indian tribes, et cetera. And so, for us, it's always like when you're trying to like recuperate history and kind of honor history, et cetera, it's not just about like whitewashing it. It's also recognizing the pain, but then kind of celebrating and being proud of the where we are now and like what that pain has produced. Obviously, we wish things could have been done differently, but you have to be like honest about what that heritage is and the good and the bad, and then kind of celebrate what we have today that we can be proud of. And so, it's always a balance, you know what I mean? You don't want to, sometimes, I don't know, in some parts, especially in the North, people are like, oh, the South, that's so backwards, whatever. But there's a lot to be proud of, past and present. But then there is a truth to that. There is also a very painful history that you have to be conscious of and be honest about, too. And so I think that story is a good, you know, mm-hmm. example of that, you know.
Well, thank you all. Thanks for doing this. Thanks for your work. It's really important. You know, the Louisianian, I appreciate the fact that you're doing this.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Yeah, it's really an honor to be on the
I think you'll need to get President Macron on the phone and talk to him some more, too.
Listen, we'll talk to him.
He did try to get even more FaceTime, but then his...
Yeah, it's meet Elon Musk, basically, at the New Orleans Museum of Art. That's
right.
A whole story of it.
That's another podcast.
Yeah,
right. Enough about it. You realize he got in this meeting room at the museum. I don't know what room they use. It's probably an office somewhere. You had the president of France and Elon Musk meeting, okay? And I thought, if I was in the museum board of directors, I'd say we need to put up a plaque there, okay?
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. That time when, yeah.
And of the two, who do you think is the most powerful?
I mean, probably
I would say Elon Musk.
Yeah,
Elon Musk.
Yeah,
that was
yeah.
Macron, no offense, Macron, but...
He kind of shot himself in the foot a little bit with his retirement age.
Oh, I'm sorry. I know that's not enough.
I was about to say, this is for the next episode.
Exactly, right. Setting it up for the next
right.
one, yeah.
Just two quick stories, if you don't mind. The, you know, there's this reputation that the French people don't like Americans,
mm-hmm.
okay? They say they go to France and they're rude and that kind
yeah.
of thing. So I don't know if y'all have found that, okay? But a few years ago, the then ambassador to France was here. He was doing a visit. And they had a breakfast, and I was with the media there, and so I was invited. And so as it was kind of winding down, most of it was talking about trade, you know. But then, any more questions? I said, yeah. So, Mr. Ambassador, there's always this feeling that the French people don't like Americans. I mean, why is that? I mean, we're nice people. Well, I thought he would deny that. I said, no, we love Americans. But he didn't say that. But he said... He said, it's the people in Paris who don't like Americans.
Uh-huh.
Right.
Right. But, yeah. he said, the people in Paris don't like anybody.
That's what I was just
saying.
I'm like, do they like anyone, though?
Yeah.
Also,
I'd
be miserable if I lived here, too. So.
Yeah. But he said, if you go anywhere else, well, certainly if you go to Normandy, okay?
Yeah,
I mean,
that's where
it
came from. Yeah.
You know, they love Americans. But the other story, I've heard the story many times. I think it was like in the 60s. An ambassador came. And there was they got that, I guess you've been to the house, the French home where the Consul General stays.
Yeah.
The
mm-hmm.
And they had a dinner for the French Consul, prominent businessman and all that. And they had the ambassador, and they had the mayor of New Orleans. At the time, his name was Vic Skiro.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And he offered a toast. And I'd like to offer this toast to the people of America. Okay. And Skiro stood up and said, and I'd like to offer a toast to the King of France. Okay, and it was kind of like this embarrassed thing with people
mm-hmm.
looking around, you know, like the
France has a king.
No King of France, you know, so they do that. But anyway, but I guess his staff was able to cover it up.
That's interesting, though. Yeah, I mean, I think it's funny. We find it's this weird thing because there is a definite, they have stereotypes about Americans. But there's also this weird fascination slash inferiority
right, like
complex.
An asterisk
and you
next
saw
to
that. We experienced that a little bit with the visit in the sense of we're big on pushing. I mean, I'm very patriotic. I love America. I love the United States. Very grateful for all everything we have. But I think part of what we try to do is promote Louisiana's singularity and why there's an importance in underlining that. And then also with France developing, like I was talking about with this education program, there's strategic and cultural reasons to develop like France-Louisiana relationship. And so I think that was one of the things that we were kind of disappointed in with the visit is that it was kind of framed more in like a United States, France
right.
kind of realm, as opposed to like specifically North focusing
France.
On the Louisiana
mm-hmm.
singularity. And I think part of that really is this whole like, this fascination of like, oh, we hate Americans. Or like Americans are like vulgar and whatever,
mm-hmm.
not sophisticated. And they don't know where like France is on the map. But like we want their approval, you know what I mean? Like we want to be like in the group, you know. And so and I do think a lot of that's Parisians in particular.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, you know.
But even in Paris, I do find I like to call it like the Louisiana loophole of when
say
that
right.
they don't like Americans, that there's really an asterisk next to it that's like Louisiana's okay.
It's like oh, our former brothers,
right,
our cousins.
Would,
yeah,
when
right.
people would say like, "Where are you from?" I would never say that I'm American. I would always Louisianese because the reception would be completely different.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Well, as you mentioned that, the people that have run plantations, supposedly Louisiana is a very popular destination for French.
Oh yeah,
French.
Totally. Yeah.
And I'm told, and maybe you know who this is, that there is a novel in France. There's some character in a French novel who's very popular, who lives on a plantation in Louisiana.
Oh, interesting.
And so maybe that's other, maybe people see like castles or something. I don't know. But anyway.
But that's the economic pitch, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's what we say.
So maybe they keep coming.
Another reason, I mean, the culture is a reason to do it, but also like attracting tourism and investment from French speaking countries is really a key pitch.
And there's still loose talk, I don't know if it's going to happen, but of getting a nonstop on Air France, you know.
Yeah. It'll happen one day.
British Airlines does that, and if Air France can do that. But you can bet that if it happens, somebody in Baton Rouge is going to be putting a money bond. Help subsidize it, which is what happens with the British Airlines thing too. So, thank you all very much. It's been delightful.
Yeah, merci.
Merci. Merci beaucoup.
Thanks for listening to Louisiana Insider. Subscribe, like, and rate our show where you listen to your podcasts, and follow us on social media at Louisiana Life Mag. Executive producer for Louisiana Insider is Kelly Massico, in cooperation with Louisiana Life Magazine. For subscription information to Louisiana Life, call 504-828-1380. Our theme music was provided by Rich Collins. Hey, that's me. Join us again next week for more discoveries inside Louisiana.